something good and did and took pleasure in it.
No, it doesn't say why. Isn't that fascinating? It's just that primal creative impulse. You can imagine God in all his worldless, silent eternity suddenly having a wonderful idea and immediately proceeding to play that out, let there be light. I mean, it's so simple and rich in its imagination. We don't think of why at all.
Well, we've been talking pretty much about the Bible at this point. There are other sources of stories about the origins. What about the East? I know you have translated both the Tao Te Ching and the Bhagavad Gita. Are there beginning myths in those, or is it simply a different way of looking at why we're here?
It's a very different way. There are mythical, you could say, thought forms that flit in and out of the Bhagavad Gita, but it's really a kind of myth that explodes myth. The figure of God there is called Krishna, and Krishna is a character in the story that opens the Bhagavad Gita, but very soon it becomes quite apparent that the poet is looking at God in the most vast way possible, a way that's astonishing for someone who's grown up just in the Judeo-Christian world.
Well, there are passages in it that are sort of mind-blowing, where God says things like, I am death and the deathless. I am all that is and is not. And where he says he contains the entire universe.
It's a portrait of God as everything, as the beginning and the end, and what is beyond the beginning and the end, as the place of the universe, as the essence of the universe, as something and beyond thing that contains everything imaginable.
This is a difficult thing for a Western reader to come into, isn't it? We like our stories of creation. We like our stories of beginnings and middles and ends. And what you're saying is that the Bhagavad Gita, which is at the heart of Hinduism, doesn't believe in beginnings or creators.
That's true. There's something beyond creation, beyond the figure of a being creating other beings. That is seen as a relatively small way of worshiping God. Interestingly enough, the way that the Bhagavad Gita enters the consciousness of the 20th century, in my opinion, is at Alamogordo in 1945, at the explosion of the first atomic bomb. When Robert Oppenheimer saw that, he, in awe and horror, he thought of the verse from the Gita, which talks about God as brighter than a thousand suns. He also thought of another verse from the Gita, which is, I am death. Krishna talks about himself as God, as including all evil, all death, as well as all good and all beauty. That's very hard for the ordinary human mind to get around.
We haven't talked at all about the Tao Te Ching, which is yet another way of looking at the world. And this one, I think, doesn't deal so much with beginnings, but it does deal with the universality of being.
The Tao Te Ching is probably, at least in my opinion, the most profound of all the spiritual scriptures that we have. Like the Gita, it self-destructs at the very beginning. It says that anything that you can say about ultimate reality is false. It's a lie, because you're using language to describe what can't be described. And along the way, it will say things like, when you go before the beginning and go after the end, then you can begin to glimpse reality.
There's a lovely little verse in your translation of it that goes something like, look and it can't be seen. Listen and it can't be heard. Approach it and there's no beginning. Follow it and there's no end. You can't know it, but you can be it.
I love verses like that in the Tao Te Ching, because even if somebody is coming at it cold and without understanding what in the world the Tao Te Ching is talking about, still there's a kind of resonance that, for many readers, sounds somehow genuine. They can't understand it. They don't really know what it's talking about, but there's something there that draws them on.
We've talked